Aha, there I am, I'm back.
There you are.
Yes, we're back. We're doing another radio fishing, and in the chair across from me today is Captain Kale. How are you, Kale?
I am doing wonderful.
Wonderful. That is wonderful. It's all wonderful. It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's beach being out there in 20-mile-an-hour winds, getting the snot beat out of you.
Well, let's see. You were going to be on a trip today, but...
Yep, supposed to be on a trip today. Just decided that it's going to be way too rough to try and get out there, because the guy wanted to specifically fish for shark.
And that's middle-of-the-harbor stuff.
Yeah, that's middle-of-the-harbor stuff. You got that 15, 20-mile-an-hour southwest wind. There's no place to hide. It's got an 8-mile head start to build up waves. And it just gets nasty out there. Like you said, you can't hide from that.
And fishing should be fun, not, every once in a while going out and, beating yourself up to win a certain fish is a good idea. But just to go out and relax and enjoy yourself.
If there's a point behind it, fine.
Right.
This was more on the instructional side, so...
It's hard to teach when you can't stand up.
Yeah, exactly. You can't stand up. You're sitting back waiting for things to happen. And shark can be boring fishing to begin with. And it's even worse when it's rough out. If it's a beautiful day, people don't mind waiting. But when it's cloudy and overcast and threatening to rain and the boat's bouncing up and down, they get impatient.
So, let's say, now the next few days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday... Everything's supposed to be a little iffy, kind of rainy and all the rest of this stuff.
Yeah, we've got a bad front coming, kind of up in the air when it's going to get here. Is it going to be Friday night? Is it going to be Saturday morning? This front scares me a little bit.
Because it seems. Why are you afraid, my friend?
Because the weatherman can't figure it out. You're getting such varying reports for the next 2 days that... You can tell that they don't have a grasp on it. And when they don't have a grasp on it, bad things happen.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just like Hurricane Charlie. Remember that was supposed to hit Tampa?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. But I don't know. I don't have this gloom and doom feeling. I'm well-armed. I'm fairly active. I don't have any gloom and doom on this. I don't know. I haven't really checked into...
I want to go fishing.
I haven't really checked into the weather. Where would be a good spot to go hide? Maybe the Myakka?
Maybe the Myakka.
Where's the wind supposed to come out of?
It's going to be coming probably southwest-west, somewhere in that range.
It sounds like the Myakka would be a good place to hide.
Sometimes.
South wouldn't be great for Myakka, but if you got west on it, if you go down just north of Cattle Dock, south of Cattle Dock,
12 foot of water, find that hole out there, which is a great place to find sharks, too.
But I'm
easiest way
more
to find it.
8 feet of water over towards the western shore between Cattle Dock and... if you come from Trout Creek and come down, it's real shallow. Then that shoreline drops off and gets pretty deep right up to shore.
Yep.
And it's about a half a mile stretch between Cattle Dock and Trout Creek.
Right.
And to me, that might be a nice place to hide.
That would be a great place to go unless you're coming from somewhere other than the Myakka to get there. Because the mouth of that Myakka can stir up pretty nasty.
Yeah, if you got a south in the wind and it's got 10 miles of harbor to come up, I've been in 6-footers there.
I mean, I wouldn't with a southwest wind fish the upper harbor. Get up near the 41 bridge because it's going to be like glass.
I was just going to say, missing the obvious place right off Punta Gorda.
There's fish there.
8 feet of water off Punta Gorda, a couple hundred yards off the bridge.
Yeah.
And put your chum bags out. Let the fish come to you.
The bridge is full of cobia. That whole area is full of cobia. Plenty of shark. If you drive over the bridge, you're seeing frigate birds out there. If there's frigate birds out there, there's predators out there.
Well, frigate. I'm sorry. It's a bird. Frigate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't know what the hell we're talking about. What are we talking about?
Frigate birds.
Okay. Frigate birds. And why is that going to make life better?
For starters, frigate birds don't follow bait. They follow predators.
Really?
They follow the predators. You're going to see them offshore following those schools of Spanish mackerel, bonita, tuna, and they're picking up scraps.
Gotcha.
They're picking up scraps. There's something up in this harbor that they can see. And I'm telling you, it's amazing what I've watched these birds in action last year. Sit there, circle over the boat in that murky water that we had last year. And as soon as they would come over the boat, one of the rods would take off. And it was a shark every time.
So
and they can
fish
see them.
Designate when you see a frigate bird over you, yep. That actually doesn't mean like bait. That means like there's big predators there.
Yeah, there's something there that he's following. And the weird thing was, and now that I think back on it, maybe it wasn't so weird. Every last time that happened, it was a lemon shark.
Well, makes sense.
When
they're
you're
big
way
predator.
Up there, that big yellow that yellowish colored, tan colored shark. Probably sticks out like a sore thumb.
And, that would
and
make
they
sense.
Can see that stuff. But it was every time last year when a frigate bird went over, the line would go off, and it was almost always a lemon shark.
It's kind of amazing, but they've recently proved with eggs and doing different stuff that dinosaurs and birds, you know, it's just a switch that turns on that doesn't give them the dinosaur tail or teeth. If you turn this little genetic switch on, they actually grow teeth again. And
well, let's hope that switch stays off.
Yeah, let's hope the switch stays
because
off. How big is a frigate bird?
If any of these seagulls start coming for revenge, we're going to be in a world of hurt.
The birds. Remember Alfred Hitchcock?
Yeah.
You know what? It's funny. Back in the 60s, 70s, it was such a scary movie. And now you look at it, you're like, really? You know.
Yeah, but how many of those turns have you had grab your bait out there when you're fishing?
Well, if a tern was 5 foot and had big teeth, well, it depends on what kind of eating it was. But, you know.
So if I have teeth now, I don't want them coming for payback.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I don't know. I'm sitting here trying to... Okay, but anyway, we're back up in the harbor. We're a few hundred... We're not close to the bridge, guys. The problem is everybody fishes close. They shut off the run of the fish.
Yep.
You got to stay back from this bridge. If you're intending... Now, nighttime's a different story, but daytime, don't snuggle up on the bridge. You're not going to catch as many fish. Get away from that bridge, 100, 200 yards away. Put your chum bag out. Let the fish come to you.
Yep. And that 15 mile an hour wind that we're getting out of the southwest is nothing more than sea breeze. Once it starts cooling off, that wind lays right down.
Right.
And it's been beautiful out there at sunset. Go out later in the afternoon, fish around the bridge, get away from it like you said. Try and get some bait. Find some ladyfish. Find some whiting. Take some crabs or big shrimp with you. And then move back up to the bridge after it gets dark and start working for your tarpon and your cobia.
Now, if you're on a trailer, this is a very simple thing because being on the trailer means you can launch right there at the park and you never even put the boat in plane. You idle out and you go over and you figure out where you're going to fish and just put your anchor down. And at night, you can just idle back. And it's a lot of fun. And believe it or not, there's a switch out there. When I was doing a lot of charters, I booked intentionally a lot of trips for that where I'd get the customers 3:30, 4:30 in the afternoon because I was going to be able to go out, find the places to fish, relax. Now I was coming back in the dark, but you know, I know the harbor so well. I know where every light is.
Sure.
I know what every light and tree line and but when you're not used to it, go out. Get out by the bridge, see what the lights look like, and then little by little work your way out. I mean, the nice part about it is the most fun, absolute best thing about coming down here is the learning. If you fish for 40 years on Lake Erie or Lake Opacon or, you know, whatever, the Wisconsin River, and you already know every creek, bend, turn, rock, fish by its first name, now you get to learn. And it's fun. It's interesting. It's cool.
I'm right there with you. I mean, I came to this area pretty much by happenstance, and fishing into the mangroves to me was familiar. It was really not a whole lot different than fishing the trout streams in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
You know? It's
all right now. Explain how do you fish a trout stream in Pennsylvania? I'm not getting this. I don't know that the relevance.
It's a tiny little stream. You've got to have the casting accuracy because you're still casting underneath trees. You're casting underneath cutout banks.
And what fish are you fishing for there?
Rainbow trout, native trout.
How about smallmouth? They got that there?
We do have a lot of smallmouth. They didn't have a whole lot in our lake when I was there. We had a lot in the river. since I've been home a few times, and the lake now is just packed with smallmouth. And it was, and that's familiar too, because we will work our artificials in our shallow water here, and you're basically doing the same thing. You're throwing against the shoreline and working that artificial, you know, to that first drop-off, which is where those smallmouth are going to sit.
Right.
And casting underneath the mangroves was familiar with me because of the trout fishing on the streams. Your casting accuracy matters. You're looking for current, just like we are down here. You're looking for it a little different.
Okay.
And you're looking for those ebb currents on the backsides of the rocks, where here you might be looking at the faster moving current on the front or the side of that
of the
point.
Structure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But you're in the same general vicinity of things.
It's familiar but not the same. It's a whole new learning curve, because you picking out the little differences. I tell people, you know, I've been lucky. I fish most of North America, Central America, Europe. And the thing I've always found is good techniques, good lures are good techniques and good lures. Doesn't matter where you take them, what you do. Did you get to fish one of our rattle traps?
Yes.
And you see we have new colors.
Yeah, I did see the new colors.
And that white one's going to be kicking.
I looked at it, and I looked at it, and I looked at it, and I, honestly, I wish I'd had it out there with me the other day.
Yeah.
But I like it. It works.
What do you think of the green?
I like that, too.
Okay. I like it. I'm not in love with it. I think it'll catch fish, but it's not. I'm not in love with the thing.
The only thing that I didn't like about those rattle traps, and it's really something you can't hold against the rattle trap because it wasn't designed for it, is I was teaching guys, they specifically wanted to learn the river.
Right.
So we start by trolling at the 75 bridge. And I was trying to troll one of those rattle traps because I had forgotten to get a regular rattle trap.
Yeah, they're no good for
trolling. Worth a damn.
No, they're not trolling baits. They're specifically designed casting, twitching, shallow water.
It's not a knock on that lure because that's not what it was designed for.
Oh, I get it. I mean, you need a regular rattle trap for fishing those bridges. If I'm going to go to the snook around the bridges, I want the real rattle traps. I mean, you've showed me the value of the rattle trap over there, you know, because I fished them there 30 years ago, and then you fall out of the habit, and all of a sudden you brought it back, and you went, see,
old it still works.
Yeah, it works. It works as good or better than ever. Now,
a lot of snapper up there, by the way.
Where's that?
At the 75 bridge.
Really?
Yeah. It was kind of weird. We'd go up one side and get railed by snook every pass, and then come down the other side and get hit by snapper.
I'll be darned.
It, weird.
What was the lure you were trolling?
We were trolling, I was throwing a mid-sized bomber.
Hey, David. David. Sorry, folks. We're trying to get David to come over here. He's our rattle trap guy. And I'm going to try and get him a mic going here. And let me see. I don't know which one that is. Talk on that one and let's...
Yeah.
Talk again.
Hey.
Okay, I think we got you there. I think that's the right one anyway.
But we were trolling the midline bomber, which is what the snapper were hitting. And because these guys were from up north, they had a whole tackle box full of deep divers that they were getting ready to throw away. And I wanted to show them the value of those old lures. And he was trolling a little old wiggle wart that he was catching the snook on.
Really?
Working really well.
I think somebody still makes the wiggle wart. I don't remember who that is. You remember? It might be a Prideco. Because I think at one time it was a head and wiggle wart. It was either that or Arbogast. Arbogast or head, and that was one of those old ones.
Yep.
David, we've been talking about the new rattle traps you got for us. What do you think?
Well, you know, this twitching trap was an idea that started right here, Fishing Franks. I mean, it was your idea, so you know more about it than I do. What I know is, you know, what it took to get it to where it is now, but you're actually the guy that said, hey, look, we've got rattle traps on the wall over there, and they all sink fast. We need something for 3 to 4 feet. And so,
actually, these really do better in 2 feet.
Two feet. Yeah, we were thinking three to four feet, but it's such a slow suspender.
Yeah, the problem is these 3 to 4 foot's about the cutoff on this lure. Like Kale was going to try and troll it up river. It sucks trolling. It's not a trolling lure.
Yeah,
it's
casting shallow. Doesn't have anything to hold it down.
No.
It's casting shallow.
But as far as, you know, that 1 to 3 foot performs beautifully, I've been throwing it in the shallows on the sandbar, and it's been working phenomenally. we're catching trout, we're catching ladyfish, bluefish, Spanish mackerel. If it's sitting behind the bar, it's going to eat that thing.
Yeah, it's been really cool. Now, I just wanted to get you on and, you know, everybody say hi. Thank you for helping us get these lures made. David was a big deal in, you know, getting my idea from the idea stage into the actual physical lure stage. And thank you, sir. I mean...
Well, the new colors that just came in look pretty hot. You know, the white ghost there, it's going to be a killer color,
yes, it
I
is.
Think.
I can't wait. I want to get that thing out into the canals at night. I really do. I want to get that thing out in the canals.
I wonder how that thing
night.
Will do around the snook lights.
That's like what that I want to find out. I mean, it might be... I don't think it's going to be too big, because lengthwise, it's about
iffy.
The same as the Storms, the Rapalas, lengthwise, height-wise, and side profile, maybe a little big, but I don't know, because everything's switching to eating pinfish now, and that's kind of your shape. So I think they're going to work underneath those dock lights.
That could really be, because, I mean, this white one, I'm just curious. That the greenback one, I think, might be the key around the lights, because that little darker color with that white, but I don't know, because that all white is pretty spectacular.
Yeah,
and, you know, the next step is probably going to be making it into smaller sides. Do that little MT, you know, if you want something with a little,
definitely
little
go
shorter
smaller.
Profile.
Definitely go smaller,
I
not
think
bigger on
our
those.
Next one is going to be that, like the little quarter-ounce one, you know, the
right.
Next size smaller.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely in the white and the gold again. We might start with that, because that is, you know, that snook lights. I mean, I hope to have them in by September, because if we can get that smaller one in to throw at the lights, oh, my God.
I think it's going to be.
Can you imagine around Venice, the lights up in Venice?
I'd take that big one up to the lights on Venice. I mean, they've got real bait up there.
Right.
So I would probably take the big one, too, and wouldn't hesitate to throw either one. But they're just going to destroy fish up there underneath those lights at Venice. The bridges up there at the bunks on some of those the bridges along the ICW.
Yeah.
The dock lights there in Lemon Bay.
Yeah, keeping that bait up like that is going to be critical, and getting it wounded bait, like, you know, okay, it's stunned, something hit it, and it's just flopping up and down trying to maintain itself. I think that's going to be critical to doing it.
And as shallow as Lemon Bay is, that lure should become a mainstay up there.
Yeah, the MR-17 and the new Twitch and Trap, it's going to be, those are going to be two lures you're pretty much going to have.
Yep.
So, but how's business been? I mean...
This has been good. Been a good year.
An unbelievable year. But I think that it being so cold and miserable, and now they went from cold and miserable up there to tornadoes and rain and thunder. And I'm watching the Weather Channel in the morning, and, you know, they're sitting there, it's raining, but they've got their, you know, they're still wearing their winter coats with everything up there.
Yeah. I mean, it's not let up. They've still got winter going on in some areas of the Northeast.
Yeah, I'm hoping El Nino does not really rear its ugly head again. They said the El Nino's back out there, the hot water's in.
I think it already has.
You think that?
Yeah, well, they had such a dry winter out in the Rockies and all through there. They didn't have any snow.
No, and look at the goofiness we've got going on down here. I mean, I think it's even affecting us here.
Oh, yeah, 24 inches of rain in less than 24 hours up in the Panhandle.
Somebody, my son called me, and he says, you know, you getting flooding by you? I'm like, no. I mean, it's raining a little bit, but it was nothing. You know, it was just a nice summer rain. And he says, well, Pensacola's going underwater. And I'm like, well, there's about a 350-mile differential between us and Pensacola. I mean, a nine-hour drive by car, but, you know, it's 300-some miles as the crow flies.
But it's...
People forget how big Florida is.
Yeah, that's right.
Until you have to drive out of it.
Yeah, then you feel like, hey.
Out of this damn state?
Yeah, I remember coming home, and you cross the Florida line, you go, all right, I'm home, and then I was like, oh, yeah, I got 5-6 more hours to go.
I used to hate.
Remember when the speed limit was 55?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I used to hate driving through Virginia, because when I drove from North Carolina to Pennsylvania didn't bother you, because it was the home stretch. It was driving through Virginia. Just the goofy shape of Virginia and that humpback and having to drive through that and taking forever. I'll take that over Florida any day.
Oh, I don't know, because Florida and Georgia both pretty long. When you hit Florida, you think you're, or Georgia, you think you're almost back. And then by the time you get through Georgia, then you get to Florida.
Look
like
at how
forever.
Many hotels.
Is this a geography lesson, or are we talking fishing?
We never have any idea.
Yeah, we just go with the flow.
What the heck? We know. if we knew what we were talking about, what we were going to talk about, this show would actually be good.
Yeah, that's why there's so many hotels in Valdosta, Georgia.
Yeah,
that's right.
Because everybody leaves here and. That's all the further you get. It's right over the state line in your first day of driving.
Yeah, I get beat up real quick. I'm old. But anyway, back to the fishing. You been out, David?
I have not, no, but I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I hear it's busting loose out there. The tarpon are starting to really do some things out there, aren't they?
They're starting to pick up.
Why don't you pick a time off and maybe the three of us go out and catch some fish?
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean... theoretically, we got to go back and test the one boat. Scott says the boat should be running. Change the computer on it.
Okay.
And your thing was some kind of air supply regulator or something like that that you had, but he put a new computer on the bus, so we got to go back and test that. If the bus tests out good, we'll get you down. We'll go out and we'll try and catch some snook, maybe some tarpon or something.
Oh, that sounds great. I'd love to do that.
We got to wait till Robert gets back. He's leaving tonight. He'll be gone for 10 days.
Oh, wow.
Costa Rica bound.
What kind of guy does that, right, when we're so busy?
Yeah, right when we're really busy. I mean,
the only good news is that he's going up in the mountains and he won't be doing any fishing.
No, he's going to be crawling through bugs and frogs and lizards.
He can have that. That's his happy, happy, joy, joy, not mine.
Not mine. No. You know Robert's like the bug, plant, reptile guy, right?
Right,
So he's going to Costa Rica to crawl through the rainforest and the jungle looking for all this poisonous stuff day and night. He's going out looking for poisonous snakes in the middle of the night.
No, it's not just poisonous snakes. This is stuff that'll kill you by the time anybody finds you poisonous. I mean, he's out there looking for fertilance vipers. Which you're pretty much a goner by the time you get off the mountain, let alone any time somebody
finds
you.
Right, they might have the anti-venom in Miami, but they sure don't have it in Costa Rica.
Exactly, and you can sum up my fears in three simple things. Insects, reptiles, snow.
Insects, reptiles, snow.
I don't have anything to do with any of the three.
See, and David, you thought you were coming into a real show.
This is covering all the bases. This is better than Oprah.
Yeah, well... You know, she's got her limitations. You know, we just don't happen to have those.
Yeah.
But you know, but if you think I'm buying you all cars, you're out of your mind. Does Tonka ring a bell?
Yeah.
So anyway, have you heard you know, I mean, you're traveling all over the state, all over the Southeast, all the time. Heard about anything going on anywhere?
Nothing that you know is happening here is probably as good as it is anywhere.
Yeah, I just didn't know if you had heard about anything up by Tampa or anything else up by there, Sarasota.
No, you know, the kingfish bite's been a little off. A lot of guys are saying they're disappointed that the bite's not as strong as they were, you know, like it normally is this time of year.
The water was colder than it has been. It's so hot. I mean, let's face it, right now, it's sticky. It's 80 degrees and sticky, all the humidity and everything.
Right.
Kind of enjoying it, kind of unhappy about it. Don't really know which.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it happened so fast.
It did. We went from a nice, pleasant spring to bam, midsummer.
And we had no in-between. And that makes it hard to adjust for.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time adjusting to this one this year. I was, you know, I've been out trying to get some time off and doing a lot of running around errands and all that. And, you know, you get out and all of a sudden, wow.
Whoa. Oh, this man. Is like mid-July.
Yeah, this is like July right now.
I judge it by the cooler on my boat.
Okay.
In the wintertime, I could make a case of water last 4 weeks. Yesterday, four people on the boat, we almost cleared out an entire case of water.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the way it is right now.
Yep.
But I think that has a lot to do with the kingfish bite is where we're going with this.
Right.
Because even though it's hot, we perceive the water as being warmer than it is.
Right.
We're just now getting into the 70s in the Gulf.
Yeah.
The Gulf should be...
We've just now broken 80 inside the harbor.
Yeah. I mean, it's this isn't like, you know, they like that 68, 72. They've been going north of us and coming back south and going north of us and coming back south. They haven't held anywhere.
Yeah, they're just on a mad search for bait.
Yeah, and everything last year, there was no difference in the water temperature between Port Charlotte and Pensacola. Mm. If you were in Fort Walton Beach, you had the same water temp as we did here.
Oh, wow.
It was the same all the way up and down the coast. And right now, they're still cold up there.
Yeah.
And we're going from cool to warm. And you've got a lot of variant temperatures. But I've seen other years like this. We had a great king mackerel run about a week or two ago. The guys who were out, they got lucky and were there, 20, 30, 50-pound kings. I mean, they just had a blast.
Nice. That's what we're talking about.
I just ordered I've got a whole bunch of king spoons coming in. I just reordered a whole bunch because I got a hunch as this summer progresses, because we're in May now, and the water's already warming up. I think as the temperatures even out again, because by, I'm going to say by the end of June, there's not going to be as much variant in its temperatures, you know. And if that temperature goes a little bit warmer up there, we will get them back south again. I think this is going to be a heck of a year.
Oh, that'd be nice. We haven't seen a really good kingfish run in a while, have we?
No, and last year we had them pretty much all summer, all through the fall. Then it got cold, they disappeared. But I think that might happen again this year. I'm looking for about a month or two to get that kings coming back through here. Actually not coming back, but you're right about them chasing bait. If the temperature is the same here all the way up north, they're going to look for the cooler water.
Right.
But with the deep water horizon, that oil spill, there's not much food in the middle of the Gulf anymore. And so those fish are going to spread out along the coast rather than bunching up in any one spot. That's what they did last summer.
Yeah, and is it El Nino, deepwater horizon? Is it a combination of the two? We're seeing a lot of weird things out there. We've had more Mako shark sightings off of our coast.
Great whites.
In the last month than we have in the last 10 years.
Great whites,
great whites,
tiger
out
sharks.
There, tigers out there. All these, and tuna. Tuna are going nuts out there offshore.
That's
all
been crazy this year. We've had more tuna than I remember in forever.
All these upper-level predators are starting to move closer and closer and closer. Nothing for them to eat here in the harbor. We're still lacking bait. We're still lacking crabs. Find a blue crab out there. It's next to impossible.
Yeah, there's some.
You go down the east side and look at all those traps on your way down through. Empty. I've seen one blue crab on the east side in the past month. You don't see any crabs out there. The pinfish are all out in the middle of the harbor.
Are you hearing about bait, like not a lot of bait up and down the coast?
No, there's no West Coast? No.
No, it's just us.
Not.
It's down in Fort Myers. Tampa's full of it. It's just
really? I haven't been hearing the opposite. Yeah. I haven't been hearing, I know we're the worst.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tampa Bay, some of the guys have moved up north to Tampa Bay because there was bait up there to be had. They moved their customer base up that way just because there was something
they can't
they could
fish
catch.
Without bait.
Yeah.
That's why they
did. Here's something interesting. The dog, I don't know what y'all are seeing as far as cobia down here, but off of Sarasota, it's been a phenomenal cobia.
Yeah. Great cobia.
Catching big cobia.
Year.
You know, a big cobia around here would be, 70 to 80 pounds. We don't get 129 pounders like we do in the panhandle, but we're catching up there more 70-ish type cobia than I've heard in a while.
The
your rattle
here.
Traps, probably one of the best baits in the world for those, by the way. People don't realize that the cool part about a rattle trap is you can use it as a jig or as a crankbait. It's so multiple use. And when I'm fishing those cobia in those deep water, I got to get that lure down there. Mm-hmm. You can throw a 3/4 ounce rattle trap, and that sucker is going to drop, and it's going to go down in 30 feet of water to the bottom, and you can bring it back up again, and it's a great sweep for the cobia. Really does.
Absolutely.
I mean, people have forgotten, I truly believe they have forgotten how versatile the bait is. Because we used to use the tremblers and all that offshore trolling.
Right.
And that was a copy of the rattle trap.
Right.
It's just a bigger copy of it. But the cobia actually respond well to them. But I would do that gold color that we've got.
That golden red.
Yeah, the golds, the reds.
Brown shrimp.
That's the one I'm looking for. That's that gold one, that shrimp color one. That thing has just been rocking them in the harbor here.
But we've
so it should do that out
it's
there.
It's been a good year for them so far. I mean, we got guys out here at the 41 Bridge picking them up every night. A lot of guys picking them up out there on their boats. Vinny sat out in front of Pirate Harbor and was surrounded by him the other day.
Is this late for him? I mean, this is running.
No, I would say if anything,
this is
early. And I honestly, I don't think they left. I don't think they left us this winter because we had quite a few reports of cobia through the winter. And it was everybody thinking everything was happening early. And I just simply think they never left this winter.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard what they're catching them on up in Sarasota, the cobia?
Yeah, most people are using eels.
Eels?
Yeah, you know, plastic eels.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. I don't do that well on the eels.
No.
I've rigged jigs with ribbon tail worms to replicate eels. I've done okay on that. The only time I've ever done really well on the eels is trolling them. I do good on trolling them, but I haven't done that well on casting them. And some of that's just in how you work the bait.
Right.
Because if you know, if you're kind of one with the bait, let's talk Zen stuff here, you know, you're actually going to be better with it. If you actually have a lot of confidence in that, you will walk the Kobe on it. And I think mine is a confidence lack, because I've got customers that use them and they catch them with it. I'm actually probably better with a bass worm, Adam. I can take in Florida rig a worm and actually catch Kobe on that better than I can with the eel.
Because you put in the kind of action that you like.
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that good with the darn eels. I don't know why.
Do you know what my magic bait for Kobe has been this year? Smashed ladyfish.
What?
That has been my magic
bait. Oh, you'll get used to it. We've got Kale on the other chair here.
Smashed ladyfish.
I mean, he follows elephants.
Take that chunk of ladyfish. Set it on the deck, stomp on it two or three times.
Yeah.
Then just set it on the back deck and just wait for a Kobe to come by. If one happens by with a shark, automatically finds your boat, which is how they usually catch them down here.
Right. Sure.
It's a much easier fish to happen into than it is to target.
Yeah, it's all incidental.
They're doing that for a reason. They're following that shark for two reasons. Number one is safety. Number two is food. They're going to pick up any scraps that come down the side of that shark, just like the remoras do, and they're a cousin to the remora. They don't know the difference between a shark and a boat. They come to the boat for the same reason. So when they come to the boat with a shark, if you're catching shark, or just happen to come to your boat, give them what they're looking for. They're looking for that piece of bait to come sliding down, that piece of scrap to come sliding down. It works really well if they follow in a shark. Put that chunk of ladyfish on a lighter tackle, throw it at the front of the shark, let it drift down the body of the shark. They'll whack it every time.
The other thing that seems to be running pretty well up there is the triple tail. Triple tail bite's been, you know, it's normally a winter bite up there, but this year it's been a little bit later.
We have heard,
like you said,
nothing.
Because the water's cooler.
Right. Yeah. I mean, triple tail should be done now.
Right.
And in a lot of places, we had a late triple tail bite here. It kind of came, went, came back, but...
You never heard a lot, though. I mean, it wasn't a fantastic triple tail.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, it was very slow. A lot less triple tail reports. You know, some people happening to find
where are they hitting them? Sarasota, Venice?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Because it's one of my favorite fish. I love fishing for them. And the... People, it's that hunting, fishing aspect of
right.
it where you're kind of going along. And what you're looking for is something that looks like an oily rag laying below a float,
a
crab trap. It literally looks like an oil rag.
Yeah, it does.
There.
It looks like one of those orange shop rags hanging out underneath a buoy.
Yeah, picture an old kind of dirty rag with some grease and oil on it. And when you see that, that's your triple tail. And all of a sudden, here's this beautiful fish. And one of my more favorite fish to fish for, because it is tricky, but I use 6 pound, 4 and 6 pound mono on them, 20 pound fluorocarbon leader, little hook, little baits. I always find the smaller the bait, the more likely they are to eat it.
We caught one by accident last year. We got into a bait ball that was being hit by Jackson and Spanish mackerels, so we threw a bait out. The guy happened to throw it way past the bait ball and let it sink down and managed to pick up a nice triple tail on white bait.
The other thing I heard about this week that was the bite turned on pretty good was the hogfish. Hogfish up off of Tampa St. Pete Clearwater in about 40 feet.
Oh, yeah? That's straight out bottom fishing, right?
Right, yeah. They're fishing, potty bottom and, you know, using live shrimp on jig heads.
Yeah. Now, for some reason or other, shrimp has kind of turned on this year as like the king of bottom baits. I mean, here, everywhere I'm hearing is that put a shrimp on, get it down by the bottom, and you're going to get, snapper, grunts, hogfish, whatever. But this is the first I've heard of the hogfish bite. That
yeah, 40 feet of water, cheesy bottom, one of those oval who's a hookup jig heads on a live shrimp.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet you I'd like to try that with a half-ounce Rockport Rattler with that little
rattler. Oh, yeah.
I think that would destroy that fish.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a shrimp out there with a half-ounce rattling jig head?
Oh,
it's got
yeah.
such a little tiny quiet rattle in it.
Yeah.
That's got to be just rocking them.
Well, you know, they're curious fish anyway, those hogfish. I mean, they're as quirky as a triple tail is. You know, they've got that, I'll come up and see what you're doing attitude.
Right.
You know?
hey, what are you doing, guys?
Like, well, hi there. He's like Nemo, you know? I'm going to see what's going on over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you using for bait? I'm not going to eat it, but I just want to see.
Yeah, that's right. But I sure do want to mess with your head.
Well, that's cool. Let's see. Are they doing any snook up there ever since the freeze? I think snook weren't supposed to be up there in the first place.
Snook fishing's been pretty good. Nothing big, though. You know, we haven't seen any monsters, but a lot of small ones.
Yeah.
You know, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, it's going to take a while because every time we have a freeze, it knocks all of them back.
Yeah.
All the way down to Venice, you know. Really, I mean, almost down to Charlotte Harbor sometimes. It'll just kind of knock them out. And believe it or not, most of the smaller snook, they're born in those areas. And it's the big snook, like the big old females, they hate being home. So, anyway, you got to go, Cal?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you got to go pick up the daughters, right?
I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay. Well, anyway, I guess we need to wrap up this last thing here of radio fishing. And I had some stuff here to help wrap it up. Let's see what I got here. We had David, the guy who helped build us our rattle traps. And, yeah, you never know what's going to happen on this show. We start, we stop, we join in, we come back and forth. Thanks so much for helping us get those rattle traps.
Oh, so glad to be here.
We're going to be, I know it's going to be a huge fish catcher. And Captain Kale, any words for the audience?
Get out there and catch some shark.
What are we doing at the fish club this month?
We are doing tarpon this month.
We're doing tarpon at the Luigi's Fishing Club.
Tarpon this month, shark the following month.
Yep. So
we're coming up on the high points of both seasons, so that's a good one to discuss while we're up there.
And we're going to be doing artificials on tarpon, live bait on tarpon,
yep.
Trolling on tarpon, all the different aspects, everything tarpon. We're going to take you from the smaller ones up to the bigger ones. And
how to properly hook a crab.
Ah, well, that's something I'm going to have to be there
definitely
for.
That's something that we definitely need to teach, because that's a big question that we get is, and it's whether we talk about cobia or tarpon, is how do you properly hook a blue crab?
Well, we'll get some blue crabs, and we'll be showing you guys how to properly, what hooks for what size crab, how to, if you're going to take them apart, if you're going to leave them together, we'll do the whole blue crab thing in depth there.
Yep.
During the tarpon seminar. But that's at Luigi's, and I don't remember what day I can look here. Let's see, 13th and 14th, it looks like. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yep, the 13th and 14th, same topic both nights. 13th you can sign up for. But anyway, this is Fish and Frank. That's Captain Kale in the chair across from me. We'll be at Luigi's with the regular fishing club. This is David, our hero for getting us our rattle traps. And
thank you, David.
Yeah, this is going to be good. You guys are going to catch a lot of fish. I'm going to make a lot of money. I really like this. So, anyway, this is very good. You know, it works great for all of us. And I think they retail for what, $4.49,
$4.99? Yeah, find another lure that'll retail for that. And this one's made in the USA.
Yep.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense, does
under
it?
$5.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where we're still figuring out the shipping thing on it. But so between $4.50 and $4.99 somewhere, we'll get you guys into that. But great lure, and it's a Fish and Frank's exclusive. I like it. I like it. Anyway, Fish and Frank's. We'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.